Summary of Big Weed by Christian Hageseth with Joseph de Agnese. Written by Lee Schollery and Quick Read. Narrated by Alex Smith. Introduction. From 1920 to 1933, alcohol was banned in the United States. As the government cracked down on the production and consumption of intoxicating beverages, organized crime began to skyrocket as people tried to supply the demand for alcohol. Finally, the American government recognized that outlawing alcohol simply led to an increase in crime. Therefore, prohibition was repealed, and the booze began to flow once more. The legalization of marijuana is like the ending of prohibition. For example, at the time Christian Hageseth wrote this book, medical marijuana was legal in 25 states and the District of Columbia. This meant that 50% of American population could walk into a state-licensed dispensary with the proper paperwork, buy some marijuana, go home, and get high without fear of arrest and prosecution. States like Alaska, Colorado, Oregon, and Washington allow the purchase and consumption of recreational marijuana, meaning anyone over the age of 21 can walk into a dispensary and purchase and use marijuana the same way you do with alcohol and tobacco. The times are changing as marijuana is no longer stereotyped as being only used by hippies and stoners. Marijuana is becoming mainstream, and people learn to use it responsibly the same way you would enjoy an occasional smoke or drink. Author Christian Hageseth found himself on the front lines of this booming marijuana business and aims to tell his story. The story of how he built Green Man Cannabis and turned it into a success. The story of marijuana in the 21st century. You'll learn the ups and downs, the ins and outs, and the good and bad. So sit down, light up a joint, and let me tell you about my world. Chapter 1. Pursuing the Green Rush. Christian Hageseth remembers the first time he encountered legal marijuana like it was yesterday. It was 2009, and he was on the golf course at Red Rocks Country Club with his lawyer and some friends, one of whom was in the legal medical marijuana business. You see, 9 years prior, voters in Colorado had voted to approve medical marijuana. But the industry was still confusing and unstable, as people believed the law could be overturned at any moment. Anyway, that day on the golf course, Jake, the medical marijuana dealer, pulled out a Ziploc bag filled with plump, sticky buds that were bright green and shot through with fine tendrils of floral color. As Christian examined the flower, he realized the difference between Jake's weed and his own street weed was laughable. Of course, they decided to smoke that spectacular weed at that moment, and with just one puff, Christian knew. He said, "I could feel and taste the difference between the street weed I'd smoke as a kid and the prime stuff lovingly created by someone who knew what he was doing. It was like night and day. It's like the difference between a Coors Light on a hot summer's day and a microbrew crafted with the freshest hops by someone who takes the time to brew something they love. It's the difference between the 9 bottle of Cabernet and the amazing bottle the sommelier brings to your table when you want something special." Immediately, Christian couldn't stop thinking about weed. The possibilities, the opportunities. He saw the future of the weed business. So after getting his medical marijuana card, Christian walked into Jake's dispensary and talked numbers, and they were unbelievable. For instance, it cost vendors $500 to $800 to grow a pound of legal marijuana. While that sounds like a lot at the time, they could then sell the same pound for $6,400 retail or $4,000 wholesale. That's a profit margin of 800 to 1300%. If you know anything about retail, those numbers are good. Really good. Of course, in 2009, people were still confused and didn't have much experience in dealing with legal marijuana. Even Christian's wife was skeptical, telling him things like, "You have children. You have a family. You need to get a job and bring home a paycheck." Indeed, there was still a stigma surrounding the marijuana business. In conversations with his neighbor about the business, his neighbor's wife would even say things like, "Don't even think about it." The career seemed risky. I mean, drugs were drugs, right? Was the marijuana business suitable for a white, upper-middle-class guy from Denver? Chapter 2. Getting an Education. Determined to learn more, Christian sought to give himself an education in the business of marijuana. Where did cannabis come from, anyway? Well, the history of cannabis can be dated as far back as 8,000 years ago, in places ranging from China to Romania, to India, Egypt, and Europe. Even historical figures closer to our time enjoyed the occasional puff of the plant. For instance, researchers found pipes in William Shakespeare's garden in England that showed evidence of being used for cannabis, not tobacco. So, where did the origins of American marijuana prohibition take root? As late as the 19th century, cannabis was widely grown and used medicinally. In fact, cannabis was once prescribed with about the same frequency as aspirin. By 1913, however, Americans had started to pass laws against the substance in states like Colorado, Nevada, Texas, and California. Newspapers released stories about this new drug that Mexicans smoked, a weed that drove Mexicans insane, gave them superhuman strength, and turned them into bloodthirsty murderers. They even called this new drug marijuana to make it sound foreign and dangerous. From there, the lies and deception only grew as the media launched campaigns to educate Americans about the dangers of marijuana that were rooted in racism and fear. Then came the 1960s, and marijuana became classified as a Schedule I drug alongside heroin and LSD. Schedule I drugs theoretically have no redeeming medical value and a high potential for abuse. This classification still stands today. However, law-abiding teens, or white teens, were still getting busted for marijuana, so Congress felt compelled to investigate the true impact of the drug. In 1972, Congress announced that the drug wasn't addictive or a gateway drug or an instigator of violence. If anything, it mellowed people out and caused them to relax. Even today, marijuana is the world's most popular illicit drug. But beyond marijuana, the use of heavier drugs declines rapidly. For example, about 40% of Americans have tried marijuana. Meanwhile, only 15% of Americans have tried cocaine, and even fewer have tried crack or heroin. In other words, if marijuana is a gateway drug,